You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Thursday, January 13th, for the first Press Pass show of the year, I might add. It's also a great pleasure to be joined for our first Press Pass show by Greg Sokinnick, who covers Vermont politics, the State House, and local events here in Bennington County for Vermont News and Media, better known as the Bennington Banner and the Manchester Journal and the Brattleboro Reformer also. Greg, great to have you back on the program again.
It's good to be back, Andrew. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, yes. It's been too long. But anyway, we've got so much to cover today. With the legislature getting started last week and town meeting events beginning to kind of percolate and bubble up and coming into view. But I thought maybe we could start off up in Montpelier and just have you tell us a little bit about what you've been seeing so far going on in the State House. A couple of things that they've had a chance to work on so far, well, town meeting rules would be one thing, as well as kind of taking next steps on the whole reapportionment question, as well as deciding whether or not they're going to meet remotely or also wear face masks or not. What's been standing out to you so far when it comes to events in Montpelier?
Well, there's a few things going on. They really did hit the ground running. As the second year in a session, it's a little... you're able to do that because folks, you're not assigning people to new committees. You've got a few new lawmakers coming in by appointment, but it allows you to sort of step right in. And the first thing they did was set things up so they could meet remotely for a couple weeks. Given the Omicron variant numbers that we're seeing during the pandemic, one wonders if a return to in-person lawmaking is, one wonders when that might happen. I guess we just have to wait and see. They've also been quite busy with town meeting business, with voting to allow, as was the case last year, to hold town meetings electronically for informational purposes and then by Australian ballot, or to allow towns to move the meeting further into the spring if they want to hold them in person when perhaps the things are a little safer or they could be held outdoors. Did hear some interest in that at Tuesday's select board meeting from Michael Naworth, the town meeting moderator. So what path the select board will take, that still remains to be seen. Back in Montpelier, we also have efforts to allow candidates for town office to file their papers without having to get signatures. That was something that was rushed through the Senate and the House in the past couple days. So that's gone to the governor's desk as well. A couple other interesting longer-term initiatives underway. You mentioned in our conversation before we started chatting, you know, on tape here, reapportionment. So every 10 years, the Vermont legislature is bound by law to take the latest census data and figure out how to distribute its population equally among its 150 House seats and 30 Senate seats. Well, this year is interesting because there is a strong movement and a slim majority of the reapportionment board, a 4-3 majority, that Vermont should return to having single member districts. That is, that every district should be represented by one lawmaker and one lawmaker only. Now, this would have a real impact here in southern Vermont, where our population isn't quite as dense as it is in Chittenden County. Chittenden County, Greater Burlington would pick up a couple of seats in any case. But the proposed majority plan would do a number of things in southern Vermont. It would split up the Greater Bennington in different ways. It would split up Windham County in different ways. But for our viewers, the most important thing the majority plan would do, and this is just one plan, there's a couple different ones, so fasten your seatbelts and stick with me. One would make Manchester its own district, which... And since both lawmakers are presently from Manchester, that would pose a problem in terms of one of the incumbents would have to find something else to do. This would also spring Arlington loose out of what's currently the Bennington 4 with Sunderland and Sandgate to form its own district. And then there would be, you know, additional Also, with the Bennington-Rutland district would be different under the majority plan because it would add Tynemouth to Linda Joy Sullivan's district, and I think it would remove Peru and Landgrove, which would then go to someone else's district up in the mountain. Now, the thing is, that's the majority district, but the majority plan, but that's not the only plan. There was a second minority plan. It was a 4-3 vote. And the Committee on Government Operations, which is the House committee that works with the redistricting plan every year, is starting with the alternate plan, which looks a lot more like the current plan we have. It would still allow two-member districts. The Bennington 4 would remain a two-member district in that plan. Linda Joy Sullivan's district would remain, the Bennington-Rutland district would remain as it is now. It would make changes in other places. The Senate, slightly different take in both cases. In the Senate, the majority plan would have carve out a third Senate district sort of in the mountains, in addition to Windham and Bennington. The minority plan, the one that's they're starting with, more or less leaves the Senate districts as they are. So what's something everyone wanted to stress is this really is just sort of a starting point. So people shouldn't panic or, you know, wondering, you know, which district am I voting for? Which lawmaker represents me? We're not there yet. There's going to be a deliberative process, and certainly these things are probably going to get heated. But the key is that the legislature has until it adjourns in order to figure out a plan that it can pass and the governor would approve. So April, May, that's when we should really look for. They'll be working on this, certainly moving forward, but April or May are when we should probably see a final plan that we can all sort of understand moving forward for consideration. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, but it's interesting, but, you know, it's still early.
I mean, the interesting question around the two-member districts is, I guess the criticism is that it gives folks in those two-member districts like Manchester, Arlington, Sunderland, two legislators to talk to and suggest ideas to, as opposed to just one, and that is considered to be unfair to folks who'd only have one representative in the legislature.
Well, it's interesting that you have an unlikely bond between conservatives and progressives on the legislative reapportionment board dealing with that. But I mean, there's arguments in neither direction. Certainly, I think when you talk about the way that districting has been historically used in other states as a means of excluding people or of making votes count less, that's something that, you know, as we move forward into 2022 and are more cognizant of the way systemic racism has worked, that's an important consideration. But there's also, you know, sort of the question of you know, how much you want to upset the apple cart and whether you want to completely start over or whether what you have, we believe that what you have is as fair and equitable as it can be. So there's going to be lots of big and small questions that are going to be part of that debate. Should be fascinating. Sure.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how much pushback some of those legislators in those two-member districts that would have to run for a different district or be actually redistricted out of their home district. I mean, under the majority plan, if I recall correctly, Representative Kelly Piala of Londonderry would no longer be living in the district that she's currently representing.
Yeah, there'd be some change.
It would be part of a district with Ludlow and Andover, I think.
Yeah.
And,
there's a couple of interesting situations there. Interesting isn't the right word. One in both plans, Pownall and Stamford are part of the same district. There's no direct road connecting Pownall and Stamford. In the majority plan, Weston is part of the same district as Plymouth and Andover. Weston is, you know, really all Plymouth has in common with Weston is that they're both on Route 100. Different school districts, different counties. You know, well, actually, no, that's the issue because Weston is part of Windsor County. So that's only concentrating sort of in the southern section of it. I mean, there's I haven't really paid a whole lot of attention to the Chittenden County aspect of it, because that's where they're actually creating districts, and that's where they're trying to push to make the state Senate representation more fair. Right now, Chittenden County has 6 state senators. They're trying to move that down to 3. So it's there's a lot of moving parts, and whenever you play with one part of the map, you have to adjust another part of the map, and so it's going to be interesting stuff.
Yeah, and plenty of other things going on too, between the Climate Council report and pension reform, workforce development. The governor talked about there, the state of the state message. But we're going to have to move on here. I'll just mention the other thing I'm going to be interested to follow is that qualified immunity case where police officers could be sued for excessive force as people, and obviously that's gotten law enforcement officials rather worked up. It's a bill that one of our local state senators, Dick Sears, is pushing forward. Also has gotten support from State Senator Becca Ballant, who is obviously a candidate for lieutenant governor, which gives me the perfect segue to what I want to talk to you about next is state politics. This is an election year on top of everything else. And as everyone knows by now, I'm sure, Senator Patrick Leahy retiring or announced that he's going to be retiring after this year. Congressman Peter Welch hoping to move up and occupy that Senate seat, leaving an opening in the U.S. congressional seat, Vermont Sloan seat. These openings don't happen very often, and we already have several people, 3 women, as it turns out, having thrown their hats in the ring. Molly Gray, the lieutenant governor, was just here in town earlier this week. We both had a chance to meet her. Becca Ballant, the state senator from Windham County and the Senate pro tem, is also in the running. And just today, our timing is perfect, we have another announcement. Karam Hinsdale, state senator from Chittenden County.
Yes. So interesting that Vermont, despite its sort of, you know, long history and sort of progressive reputation, has never sent a woman to Congress.
Yeah, that really is amazing.
That's like the only, every other state in the union has done so except for Vermont. It's part of it is, you know, Vermont has limited representation because of its small population. And also, you know, sort of that's part of the effect of seniority and incumbency and sort of the way that those two things play together. And that sort of prevents turnover. But here we are, Senator Leahy stepping down, Peter Welch seeking the Senate seat that Senator Leahy is vacating. And so, here are 3, you know, very intelligent, very eloquent women on the Democratic side. We're still waiting for a Republican in the House seat. We'll get to the Republican Senate seat in a minute. It's interesting to me how quickly this race has just sort of. I mean, we have until August. I mean, the primary is in August, and so it's a marathon, not a sprint. So being out ahead in fundraising or the polls right now is like leading the marathon in Hopkinton. Doesn't count for much. If you're from Greater Boston or you know Greater Boston, you can follow along with that reference. Otherwise, just look in the map. It's the starting point for the Boston Marathon. Anyway, just got off the phone with Karam Hinsdale, and she was telling me about sort of her story about her advocacy for a Green New Deal as a legislator, as a state representative from Chittenden County. About her family background, she would be not only if she were to be elected, she would be the first person of color to represent Vermont, as well as the first woman to represent Vermont. She's also, I mean, Becca Ballant and Molly Gray both declared a month ago. So they're a little ahead right now on the fundraising side of things. But Karam Hinsdale told me that she's pretty confident that she can catch up pretty quickly. So... and that's going to be an interesting side. I was looking at the interesting side note, but also sort of something that's really central to the race, because I was looking at the past fundraising totals for the last time the seat was empty in 2006, when Peter Welch ran against Martha Rainville. And Peter Welch in 2006 raised $2 million, and Martha Rainville raised a little less than $1 million for the race that Peter Welch eventually won. That's 2006 money before Citizens United. So the amount of money that could flood into this state for its congressional and Senate races is, I think its jaws will drop. And I think there'll be a place for a healthy conversation about the role of fundraising and the role of money in politics. Because we really haven't seen a contested race in this state in a congressional race in some time, like a competitive congressional, contested congressional race. Moving to the Senate really quickly, we learned this week that the former U.S. Attorney Christina Nolan is considering running on the Republican side against against Peter Welch. She was a U.S. attorney based for Vermont, based in Burlington in the Trump administration. I have to say, you know, because being a U.S. attorney doesn't exactly open you up to making lots of political pronouncements. They're usually they say very little and usually they speak strictly on point. And then, so it'd be interesting when she's asked if she actually does run to really get into her political views and sort of what she would propose to bring to the table as Vermont senator if she were elected.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. It's also going to be interesting to see if there are going to be any Republicans that run for the congressional seat. So far, I'm unaware of any announcing or even among the whispering crowd that, so-and-so might. Haven't heard any scuttlebutt around that, so that'll be kind of intriguing.
It is still early. I mean, but it is interesting that it's strange that we haven't even heard a name.
Yeah,
I think if someone was really interested in coming from out of left field, perhaps someone who had a lot of money or who was, you know, someone who people might know as part of the Scott or Douglas administrations, would at least start putting their name out and letting people know, hey, alternative over here. Hmm. Perhaps there might be someone who's willing to sort of sit back and let the Democrats run their primary and then, you know, sort of swoop in when they've spent a lot of money and energy trying to win that nomination.
Because, yeah. Of course, some of the other Republicans who have run for those seats in recent years, I'm thinking Bruce Lisman, Rich Tarrant, they were businessmen who really didn't have a political background or hadn't served in public office, but were quite wealthy and were able to finance their own campaigns.
Sure, the Scott Milne model, if you will. But I do think that, given the interest in electing a woman this time around, I do think that if we see a Republican come forward in the congressional race for the House, that is, that it might be a woman as well.
Two other races, just to touch on real briefly, that are going to be interesting on a couple of levels. Of course, the governor's race and the lieutenant governor's race. It's going to be fascinating to me to see who Democrats nominate to challenge Phil Scott. He received a lot of kudos for the handling of the pandemic and was recently, I think in one poll I saw, rated as one of the most popular governors in the entire country. And I suppose a lot of would-be Democrats who might be thinking, oh, this is my turn, are going to go, I'm not sure I want to go on a suicide mission here. And again, I'm kind of unaware of anyone who kind of is lurking in the background, ready to pounce. I mean, T.J. Donovan, the Attorney General, was rumored for a while to be interested, but I haven't heard anything recently that he's putting the pieces together to make a run. And it's hard to see David Zuckerman coming back to try again, but who knows? Rebecca Holcomb was another candidate in the Democratic side 2 years ago. She lost in the primary to Zuckerman. But shifting though real quickly to the lieutenant governor's race, which to me I think is going to be really interesting this year because you have Molly Gray, after only one term, running for Congress. I'm assuming she can't then just sort of decide if that doesn't work out to then run for lieutenant governor again. But assuming that doesn't happen, that person, whoever wins that race in November, is going to be in a really good position to run for the governorship two years or so down the road, because assuming Phil Scott wins, that would be a fourth term for him. That's about as many terms as most governors have recently served. I know you can go back, I think it was Dick Snelling or someone had five terms.
Howard Dean.
Howard Dean, of course, right. But it's been a while, so it might well be his last term. And that person who's then in lieutenant governor is in a great position. And so far we have a couple of candidates who've indicated an interest. Patricia Preston, the executive director of a nonprofit known as the Vermont Council on World Affairs, has announced that she'll seek the Democratic nomination for that. She joined Representative Charlie Kimball, a Democrat from Woodstock. you know, on the Republican side, we might have Senator Joe Benning from Caledonia County also stepping into the picture. So I think that'll be an intriguing one to watch.
Maybe see, Representative Kimball did briefly seek the speakership last year before sort of stepping aside for Jill Kerwinski of Burlington. He's from Woodstock, so he's more, he's very, he's from a business background, I believe, and so I think he's the rural development side, that there's maybe a coalition that might sort of build around him. He might build a coalition that way. Ms. Preston, I must admit, I know less about, but, you know, from her connections with her, with the nonprofit she works for, certainly that gives her a leg up. Joe Benning is, if he does declare as expected, he's been in the state Senate for a long time. He's sort of, one of the remaining Republicans in that body. But he's a defense attorney, and he's someone, if you listen to him speak on the floor or listen to him in committee, he's got a pretty good command of his subject matter. He's a good speaker, and I think he might make an, it'd be interesting to see how that would translate to a statewide campaign. Mm. Also, we haven't seen a campaign coming from the Northeast Kingdom in some time. And I mean, the kingdom seems to be, just from looking at its elected representatives and senators, you know, seems to be sort of remaining more of one of the more conservative parts of the state, along with Franklin County. So, you know, he might, if he does decide to run and wins the nomination, he might be a formidable candidate.
Yeah, it could be. Well, again, we have time to digest this and more, and it'll be fascinating to follow. So let's turn to the local scene here real quick, because all of a sudden, with town meeting less than 2 months away and everything, there's certainly some interesting developments percolating here, particularly in Manchester. We've had a couple of intriguing developments and things that might be you know, on the town warning, and one of them took place just this week at the select board meeting on Tuesday night, where a consultant report was revealed about their findings about their concerns about the Manchester Rescue Squad and how maybe it might be a good move on the part of Manchester to spin off and create its own rescue squad. You were at that meeting and reported on it today. What was your takeaway from that meeting? I mean, I quite frankly was somewhat surprised by the tone of it. It seemed very negative, and well, I'm just wondering where they're going to go with this.
Well, I think it was notable that Ivan Beatty, after the presentation, the chair of the board, Ivan Beatty, noted that that was the most sort of intense studying of consultant report he'd seen, you know, from the board and from the members of the audience in some time. It's serious stuff. Because we talk about critical services that a town provides. I mean, police, fire, ambulance. And you could probably rank those in any order, but, you know, probably ambulance, considering the number, the different ways medical, people's health sort of interface. You know, when you talk about people's health, that's really, you know, certainly in the past 2 years, as we've been dealing with a pandemic, I think that probably gets to the top of the line. And it seems to me, just from sort of from what I wrote and sort of trying to sort of read between the lines, there might be the system that was put in place to govern the ambulance service. It was well-intentioned because it tried to spread out the financial responsibility for the service, gave it some more stability, and also tried to work as a way for towns and the service to communicate with each other. It does seem that there's been some gap in communication between the rescue squad and the town of Manchester. The treasurer, Jim Salzgiver, was telling me that, you know, he felt like some of these concerns that were raised in the report and in the and by folks in Manchester during the consultant's interview seemed to sort of take them by surprise, that they really didn't weren't aware that they're, you know, that there were concerns or complaints. At the same time, when you think about the possibility of Manchester fronting its own ambulance service, it has this once in a lifetime opportunity with all these ARPA dollars to put up money that would to start fresh. But that's, you know, we're talking about a good $500,000, which is, you know, about half of the town's ARPA allocation. We're also, you know, talking about the potential expenses and staffing issues that come with ambulance services. And there's an interest in trying to partner with someone, but that partnering has to be done right. And it has to be, you know, it's done in such a way that we don't wind up back at the same place a few years later with unhappiness with a partner and trying to figure out what to do next. But at the same time, if there's dissatisfaction with the way the ambulance service is running, there's a couple different things you can do. You can either try to address that or move forward. And I think there's an opportunity here, for the sides to come together and try to figure out, okay, what is it? Where are we somehow falling short? Where are we not communicating? And is this salvageable? Because it's a big step for Manchester to form its own ambulance service. I mean, is it undoable? No, but it's ambitious though, and it does come with some risk. Perhaps this is. I mean, there's apparently going to be a meeting of the ambulance board coming up shortly, maybe before this airs, we might know from that whether there is an opportunity to fix the relationship and move forward, or whether there's a strong belief that Manchester needs to start fresh. Either way, I think it got everyone's attention. That's an issue that everyone should be watching closely.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, we could talk for another half an hour, Greg, very easily.
Sure.
Without breaking a sweat. I think there's so much going on, but unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there for today, but just wanted to thank you again for making the time for this, and Happy New Year again. And, I guess we're all going to be staying busy for the next couple of months anyway.
You know,
we never even talked about COVID, but I'm sure there'll be.
Oh, yeah, there's a pandemic on still. Stay safe,
right.
Everyone. Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, on that note, stay safe, everybody. Thank you for being with us today. I hope you've enjoyed our show. And, well, we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a good one. Thanks again, Greg.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.